Hello learners, and welcome to Homeroom with Salman Khan, brought to you by Khan Academy. We're an educational technology nonprofit dedicated to bringing a world-class education to anyone, anywhere. And Sal is our founder. I'm not Salman Khan, I'm David Reinstrom. I'm on the content team, and I'm here to introduce today's show. Since school closures began earlier this year, Sal's been hosting a chat show on YouTube and Facebook Live called Homeroom, where he answers questions from learners and interviews notable folks from the world of education, technology, and more. We decided to take some of our favorite conversations from that web show and make them into a podcast. This week, let's go back to a conversation from May 2020 with Angela Duckworth, the Rosa Lee and Egbert Chang Professor of Psychology at the University of Pennsylvania. She's famous for her research on grit and perseverance, something you'll hear Sal talk about with her later in this interview. Take it away, Sal.
I'm super excited to introduce our guest, Angela Duckworth. In certain circles, she is a megastar, I would say. I've known Angela for many years. I think we ran into each other at a conference in Canada. This was like eight or nine years ago. But I knew Angela was onto something. And since then, I think her notoriety has just exploded because the things she talks about are so relevant to education. I think especially relevant to the time that we're dealing with right now. So Angela, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Sal. And I'm going to tell you a secret. You didn't just run into me. I actually flew to Canada because I knew someone told me that you were going to be, and I ran into you, but not by accident. So I was stalking you.
That's, well, you see, this is how the tables have turned, because now I kind of stalk you.
And you just emailed me. It's a lot easier for you. Like, you didn't have to fly to Canada.
Exactly. I didn't. So I'm glad that we are mutually stalking each other. And I'm gonna start off the conversation, but I do want to encourage everyone who's watching on YouTube and Facebook, put questions in there for Angela, and you're gonna learn a lot more about her areas of expertise if you don't already know of them. But I will start. Angela, you're known, you're one of really a handful of, I would say, pioneers or leaders in this field of mindset research, and you're really known for grit, defining it in more precise terms. So explain what mindset research is and your view on it, especially relative to grit.
The term mindset has caught on. I have to think that it's got to be almost the most commonly understood new scientific discovery in psychology and among non-psychologists, right? Among parents and kids and educators. So what is mindset? You know, mindsets are beliefs that you have about the world or about human nature that drive so much of your behavior. They may not be beliefs that you think about actively, but they're very powerful. And in particular, Carol Dweck at Stanford, our common friend and really my hero, she's worked her whole life on something called growth mindset, beliefs about your intelligence. And you can either have a growth mindset, which is, you know, the belief that intelligence is malleable, that your abilities can change, or you can have a fixed mindset, which is the belief that they can't change, that, you know, you are who you are, who you are, you're either a math person or not, you're a natural athlete or not. In my research on grit, which is passionate and persevering effort towards long-term goals, I find, and I think our early work with Carol, but in subsequent studies also, kids who have a growth mindset about intelligence tend to become grittier. And then those increases in grit tend to lead to increases in growth mindset. So there's a kind of virtuous cycle. When a kid really believes that their abilities can change, they're more likely to persevere, to try hard at things, which then reinforces that belief.
And just to make sure I understand these, because I often say these in the same sentence, and they are very closely related. Growth mindset is, I believe that I can do more. I just have to step out of my comfort zone and apply myself. And if I fail at something, it's not a judgment on some type of innate ability. It's a moment to learn from. While grit is that ability to stick to it.
So that, yeah, even I would say grit. I mean, grit is a behavior. Grit is like doing it, right? And mindset might be why you're doing it, right? So mindset is like the underlying belief that would motivate a certain pattern of behavior that I would describe as grit. And let me just say, because, you know, my kids are still teenagers, and you know, I'm sure a lot of people have kids who are even younger than ours. I think that it's not just, when I think of grit, I don't think just of like working hard. It's also loving what you do. It's also being intrinsically motivated over long periods of time. So that's just a part of grit that I hope, you know, we can talk about in this conversation, because I don't want parents to get the message that the only thing kids need to do is develop a work ethic. They also have to develop interests, loves, passions.
And that's, I think, a good segue. I mean, you know, you're a professor of psychology at University of Pennsylvania. You've been doing research for a while. You have a best-selling book named, not a surprise, Grit.
Yeah, no imagination there on the title.
No. It's the power of passion and perseverance. I think, you know, a question that a lot of parents are asking, my wife asked me to ask you this when she saw that I was walking into the walk-in closet to interview you right now. And it's a question that has been coming up throughout the school closures, is that there's a lot of resources out there. There's Khan Academy. We've put out daily schedules. But what is tangible advice for parents, teachers, or students for themselves to have that grit, to be able to act on that growth mindset, so to speak?
So I think that not only for grit, but for lots of other things that we would love our kids to develop as they grow older, the combination of challenge and support is magical. And if you ask the question, like, what are good parents, right? Like, what does the science of parenting say? There's now decades of research on parenting styles, and the style of parenting that is the best, really. I mean, I can just say that flat out. Like, it's the best. Your kids will be happier. They'll be more socially adjusted, but they'll also be more accomplished. Like, it's this combination of being very supportive, but also being demanding. So you could say it's tough love. Now, why do I bring that up now in the middle of the COVID crisis? Because kids are being challenged. So their challenges have been, I think in all cases and in many different ways, raised, right? Now, the question is, like, how as parents can you meet that with increased support? Not trivial, because we're under our own stress, et cetera. But if you ask the question to me, like, where does psychological growth come from? It comes from this combination of, like, I'm being asked to do something I can't yet do, but there's a floor beneath me. There's a foundation. There's unconditional support. There's Khan Academy. There are people who will help me, you know, like, make a schedule so I can go on Khan Academy. So I think parents can respond to this crisis by, in some ways, thinking of it as an opportunity for their kids to develop these qualities. I call them character strengths, but you can call them SEL skills. You can call them anything you want. And I really do think it's not too Pollyanna to say that it is an opportunity to do all those things.
And what would you, I mean, one, it's impressive that there is, I mean, people have done the research and they've been able to categorize different styles. And this, what you're describing, seems to be the winning style. And I'm personally insecure to see how well I'm, I hope no one audits me to see if I'm,
give
if
you
I'm
a quiz.
Or not. Give me a quiz or watch our family. But what either from your research or just as a parent that you've seen of good practice, I know y'all have done a lot of research on interventions that can help change people's mindsets. So, I mean, one, I'd love to hear about that research. And then, are there things, let's say hypothetically, you were to have a 5.5-year-old at home or an 8-year-old
at home.
For example, I don't know, some people I know. And, you know, they sometimes do their work, but they're maybe just doing the minimum, or sometimes they don't even want to do that because they feel like there's a little less accountability now. What does the research tell us, and what advice would you have for this hypothetical person that I know?
Yeah, well, you know, I have a non-hypothetical 17 and a non-hypothetical 18-year-old, but, you know, non-hypothetical 5.5-year-old, it sounds like, on your end. I think one of the challenges of parenting is to always be titrating to where your kids are. Because when I said that you need to be, and I do believe this, like, you need to be a demanding parent, I don't think kids I mean, kids need parents. Like, they need us to ask them to do things that they can't yet or wouldn't on their own do. But the titration part is, you know, how much is a stretch for your kid at this particular moment in time and also at this stage in their development? It may not be the same as it is even for another kid in the same family. So the titration is how to have your kids, you know, be challenged, but not too much. And so, for example, you know, when parents have a idealistic goal of like their kids waking up, making a schedule for the day, sticking to the schedule, you know, if you start with a really unrealistic goal, and you ask your kid to get there, you know, immediately, then everybody just gets discouraged and frustrated. So one piece of parenting advice is to take stock of where your kids are and then try to move like 10%, right? As opposed to like 100% towards something that you think is better. And in general, I find that even adults procrastinate and don't do well when they fail to break down big goals into smaller parts and then, you know, make a more reasonable schedule about, you know, how they're going to accomplish, you know, go down the list.
That's good advice, not just for parenting. I mean, I just, when, while you were saying that, I'm thinking about some of the things that my wife and I have attempted to do, especially with some of our younger kids. I was like, yeah, maybe if we just broke that down a little bit more or just expected the first step of that. And then once,
I mean, Sal, this pattern, is what you do so well. Like, by the way, I mean, I will just say, you have taught my kids since, you know, as you do so many kids around the world, like, and you may not have known, but the reason I flew to Canada to stalk you was because my kids were spending so much time learning from you on Khan Academy. And I, you know, just got really interested in, you know, how psychologists like me might learn something from you and be helpful. And I think what you do so well, Sal, is you break things down, you know, into like parts so that like you can swallow it kind of like a teaspoon at a time. And I think kids need our help as parents to help them, you know, do that. And I sometimes feel like, you know, parents might have unrealistic expectations about, you know, like how much progress they can, you know, expect their kid to make when it comes to self-regulation or time management or discipline. And it helps to remember that the great teachers know to break things down.
No, well, I think you're being very flattering, but I think the point is right. And I think as parents, as much as we try to be centered, we can also sometimes feel an urgency like, wait, I heard someone else's kid has their whole schedule and is doing everything perfectly. And then you're probably doing the wrong thing to your kid, and you're trying to get them from zero to that. And that other child probably isn't doing that. There's probably a little bit of marketing involved there.
I think we probably all have stories of, you know, a child in my family was always these like cousins that I have in Boston who, you know, were seemingly perfect. And actually, now that I'm all grown up, I realize they were pretty much perfect and they all became, you know, like Harvard professors.
If you're the non-perfect one in the family, who knows what they're doing?
I think I'm the black sheep. But yes, there's a very distinguished branch of our family, but I'm not in it. So you know, why do parents make those comparisons? I think they're just, you know, they're kind of just what come to mind for the parent because they are, you know, like, oh, that's the mental model I have in my head, so I'll just share it with you. But I don't think kids benefit very much from those kinds of comparisons. And in general, in schooling, I think, and I'm thinking, I know you have a global audience, but I'm thinking about the American schooling system. You know, it's a very kind of rank ordered, like, how are you relative to these other like 900 kids who are your age? And those kind of comparisons, like, am I as smart as her? Am I smarter than him? I don't think they're super beneficial most of the time. I think kids actually benefit from making a different kind of comparison, which is, how am I compared to how I want to be compared to how I was? Right. And that's a comparison that you can do something with. And that's a comparison that, you know, doesn't diminish another person by yourself making progress. And, you know, when I think about Khan Academy and your whole philosophy, because, you know, you have a book too, which I read, and, you know, your whole philosophy of like how education ought to work, I really do think it's, you know, it's you with you and like how far you can go, and not you and your cousins in Boston or you and, you know, the 899 kids who are also in your graduating class.
And I mean, with that thought, and there's a ton of questions coming in, I want to get to those questions, but I'll ask one of my last indulgent Sal questions, which is, you've done a lot of research that you can change people's mindsets. I mean, tell us a little bit about some of the research that will give all of us a growth mindset about changing our kids' mindset about grit.
Well, I'll tell you about a big study that was run recently and published in Nature. It was a huge scientific team led by David Yeager at UT Austin. And also, of course, Carol Dweck was involved. I was just one among many team members. But what it was an experiment to see whether we could increase growth mindset in ninth graders all over the United States. And the experiment was a success. And if you ask the question, like, what did you do? How did you increase growth mindset? There were these brief, really just, you know, minutes long activities where students A, learned that lots of other kids around their age, you know, also sometimes feel stupid when they get something wrong, and they can kind of slip into a like, oh, I'll never learn this mode. But then they learned about the neuroscience that's actually true, that the brain is plastic, that there is tremendous growth. And when you do struggle and you make a mistake and you look at it again, that your brain actually changes. So for me, when I think about this, one of the reasons why intelligence is a hard thing to get kids to understand, like that it is malleable, it's because it's invisible. It's like, it's in your, you know, you can't see your brain, right? Whereas if you said to a kid, like, do you think if you lifted all these weights, you know, your biceps would get bigger? They would say, like, of course. But intelligence is kind of behind, you know, the forehead. So you don't see it. Anyway, ninth graders learned about the modern neuroscience of brain plasticity. And then the last thing that they did was they actually wrote a letter to other students that were, you know, for example, like a little younger than you. Like, what would you say? How would you summarize all of this for them? And I think this combination of feeling like, oh, I hear the voices of other students who, you know, can sometimes feel dumb when they do something, but then they learn to not feel that way, to understand mistakes as growth and learning. You get some scientific evidence, and then you are put in the position of communicating that to other students. I think it's quite brilliant, honestly. And in this study, there were measurable increases in mindset, growth mindset, and then also, particularly for students who had schools where the cultures supported it, there were also improvements in grades.
Wow. Just to make that very tangible.
Actually, I should say test scores. I think there was
test scores.
I should like check on that. I think it was like math grades and test scores, but yeah.
No, but either way, that's very compelling. I mean, are there ways for parents to get that intervention for either themselves or their kids?
Yeah, I'll make sure that you all have the hyperlink to the work, and some of this work was supported by the Mindset Scholars Network, and you know there's a link where you can actually get this also for educators. I mean, I'll make sure that you have the right resources. And finally, I'll just say I think parents should read Carol's book. I mean, they should read your book too. They should read lots of books, but I think Mindset is a terrific, and it's a fast read. It's beautifully written.
Good advice. So there's a lot of questions here. So from YouTube, Joe asks, Angela, can you use grit to force yourself to have a passion for something you have little interest in? For example, a job.
No. If you want more than a one-word answer, I can elaborate. But I don't think that you can force yourself to be passionate about things. When I measure intrinsic motivation, feeling genuinely curious about things, and also feeling like your work is aligned with your personal values, that is what's correlated with grit, not extrinsic, you know, like I was coerced to do it, or I'll make a lot of money if I do it. So I think for me, the advice would not be to try to force yourself, but actually to find, if you're already an adult, like to find a job that is more closely aligned with your developed interests and your values. And if you're still a kid, I would say, you know, the word you want to use about with passion is develop. I think you want to develop passions that are mature. And so that requires, you know, lots and lots of time, you know, doing things, becoming more and more and more interested in them and committed to them. But I don't think it's a process of forcing yourself or for anybody else to force you either.
And this is really interesting because, so, you know, grit, when people think of the word just in the colloquial sense, they think of like being able to power through pain
as one
form of grit. But that's not what you're saying.
You chose the wrong word.
You exhibit the – no, it's a great word. You can exhibit the qualities of grit, but it's not because you're powering through pain. It's because you are intrinsically motivated in what you're doing.
Yeah, and I don't want to paint this like – you know, look, you work really hard, Sal. I work really hard. I think there are parts of our day where we don't want to do what we have to do, but we have to do it. But I would say about myself, and I'm sure that you would say it about, like, you love what you do. You love what you do. And so, yeah, there's practice and there's hard work and there's getting over disappointment. Nobody loves doing it. But overall, you love what you do. And I think that's the part that's missing in that one syllable word, that it doesn't sound like it, but when I study it and when I find it in a really high performer, it's really always there.
You know, I'll throw out a hack that I think is related to Joe's question, and I think it's consistent with what you said, but I have no scientific backing other than my N of one and what's going on in my own bizarre head, which is one of my skills that I have, and I'm quite proud of it, is I can convince myself to be passionate about almost anything.
Is that so, right? Wait, give me an example.
Almost any, you know, well, I mean, a lot of people in Khan Academy, they can hear it in my voice sometimes in these videos. Like, I'm excited about the Aldol reaction. And they're like, why? I was like, well, I won't even make the video until I am excited about it. Because there is something exciting. You know, in academics, what I remind students is almost everything is the culmination of someone's life work. And they would have killed to have the answers that you have in your textbook or that are being explained to you on a Khan Academy video. And that by itself makes it exciting. You know, and even things as part of my job that aren't like my favorite thing. You know, I love our auditors. They're great people. But, you know, sitting in like a meeting about our audit report isn't like, you know, what I click my heels on. But I remind myself, well, no, this isn't a very important step in order for us to become a real organization, in order for us to serve more people. So I definitely do that, I remind myself why what I'm doing matters. And
yes.
You know, I had a boss that told me my first, you know, I was working at a big company, and there's times that I was like, oh, it doesn't matter if I show up or not. I'm kind of a cog in this big thing. And he said, look, you just have to show up and make yourself and make the company better off today than it was yesterday. And there's something about that that made me feel very motivated about it. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I can get passionate about that. But I think we're consistent. As long as you can get yourself authentically passionate, motivated, then you can, the grit will kind of happen or can happen.
Yeah. And okay. So you said, oh, this is your N of one. Like, well, let me give you a little science behind that. So, when you think about why you have to go to an auditing meeting or think about kids doing their homework, right? I mean, so many kids feel like, why am I doing this? This is totally pointless. What they're feeling is that there isn't any purpose to their work. There isn't any, like, this is a means, but what's the end? And so what maybe your boss did, and certainly what human beings do, is it's useful to think about your goals hierarchically. Like, you know, why am I on this video with Khan Academy, with Sal Khan? It's like, because actually I believe that psychological science can help kids thrive. So for me, this time that we're spending together has a purpose. If a kid is doing their homework and they see the point of doing these, you know, practice problems, or like, and they see the point of this class overall, it's really like what you're doing is you're helping them see the kind of the goal that sits above this goal. Like, oh, this is the reason why I'm doing it. The hierarchy makes sense to me. So I agree with you that sometimes we forget and then we have to remind ourselves, and then it gives meaning and purpose to something that otherwise would be mundane. But I guess I wouldn't go so far as recommending to people that you could make yourself passionate about everything. I don't think that's what you're saying, but because I don't think it's possible for people to like really literally be randomly assigned to a job and then just be, because I think about your life, Sal, and I think, you know, obviously it took an unexpected turn when you left, you know, your career track and you became who you are today. But I also have to believe that, you know, I couldn't just like have randomly selected any career path for you, that you would be working as hard as you are now, for Khan Academy.
Oh, for sure. I mean, there's definitely an optimization. When I have a choice, I definitely am optimizing for what fills my bucket, so to speak, and I'm learning a lot of 5-year-old language. What fills my fills my bucket? But no, it's an interesting. I have to ponder that. I have to meditate on that more. To what am I living in my own delusion or not?
I think you've made it. Here's how I just taught this undergraduate class called Grit Lab to 60 undergraduates at my University of Pennsylvania. And when I had to summarize the entire class in the last hour of the class, I said, all right, three things: choose easy, work hard, pay it forward. And the Choose Easy was about choosing things that you're naturally or intrinsically interested in. They feel like they resonate with your values, you're good at them. Or like, I actually think that's the part that you did. You chose something that you're very, very good at and committed to. It resonates with your deepest values. You love learning, you probably love teaching. Okay, then what's number two? Well, number two is work hard. And number two is, you know what? The audit is part of running Khan Academy. You know what? Raising money is part of Khan Academy. I'm sure you don't like that either. You know what? Like doing whatever it is that you need to do. And I think that's where you're using these like mental hacks to kind of like get yourself to be excited about an audit. Or, and that's the part where you do need to use discipline and strategies to work hard. And by the way, the third part is pay it forward, right? So, you know, for every good person in life, you know, that means, you know, doing things for other people. But I do think that sometimes young people get these confused and they think they should choose hard and that the work should be easy. But like, no, 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 you choose things that are kind of fluent and fluid for you. And then there's always going to be friction. And that's when you have to learn all these ways to work hard.
Now,
did that make any sense?
It made a ton of sense. And this is a fascinating conversation. And, you know, whenever we're having these good conversations, the time goes by far faster than I would like. I hope we have more time to have a this conversation, because I think we're just getting started. Maybe we have time for one more question from YouTube. Sanjeev Kumar asks, can anyone develop grit at any age, or is it more specific for children and young adults?
I really do believe that one of the great lessons of psychological science over the last few decades is that we are remarkably malleable. In other words, Carol Dweck is not only right about intelligence, but about pretty much every other facet of human nature. And I'm not saying that you can metamorphose into like some completely different human being in a day, but I do think, yeah, you can develop growth mindset, you can develop grit, you can become a nicer person, you can become a better listener, you can become a little more emotionally, like all of those things. And it's not just childhood, and it's not just adolescence, and it's not even just early adulthood or middle adulthood. There's not a point in the entire span of a life where people stop learning and growing if they're open to it.
Wow. I want us to have a conversation about each of those things, because I want all of them.
I would love to have another conversation, Sal. You know, I'm a huge fan of Khan Academy, and I'm a huge fan of yours.
Let's book it, because I think we're just getting started. I mean, there's so many questions folks are, I'm trying to see if I could squeeze one more in. Let's see. This is a big one, but from YouTube, Bilal A asks, where does passion come from? I'm 31 and still trying to find my passion. I don't find anything interesting enough to put my soul into. Any thoughts there? I have some thoughts.
Okay, well, you start with your thoughts, Nanala, and then this will be a good last question. What's your thought first?
My quick advice for Bilal is make space for exploration. I had that same angst when I was young. I had good jobs, but they weren't my passion. But I had space for exploration, and through that space for exploration, I was able to find my true passion.
Okay, that's great advice. I agree with you. And when I was 31, I was crying and crying on my living room couch, not knowing what I wanted to do with my life. Literally, I mean, ask my husband. The couch was nearly salty with like, you know, you could almost see the precipitate of the salt on the surface of the pillows. I was crying that much, and I really sympathize with this feeling of like, oh my gosh, I'm trying to have a passion, but I don't know what it is. And for me, it was, you know, giving myself a little freedom, but I think also it was reflecting on what I had become interested in the past. And when I thought back to when I was 16 years old, I remembered that when I was 16, I went to summer school, and because my parents, who were very cheap, like wouldn't pay for anything until like their kids could pay for it. So I had saved up all my money, and the first time I could afford to do anything over the summer was when I was 16. So I got to choose, and I opened up that course catalog, and what did I choose? I chose two classes, psychology and nonfiction writing. And that's essentially all I do all day, psychology and nonfiction writing. So I guess I would suggest that if you're a 31-year-old who, like me, was maybe crying a lot, really angst-ridden, is that in addition to giving yourself some space for self-exploration, and is try to recall in your life the times where you were interested in things, where you were excited, and you might be able to piece together some of the puzzle. And I kid you not, when I was 32, I had thought about it. I was like, oh, I'm interested in psychology, I'm interested in writing, I used to teach math, that must mean I'm pretty good at math, or I like math, I don't know. And I think I should be a psychologist. And then I went to graduate school.
Wow. And then you became Angela Duckworth.
Well, then I learned a lot about psychology. I'll say that. Yeah, I think for me, I would say that now my work is my calling, and it is who I am. I think about it all the time. I think about it if I wake up in the middle of the night. I think about it on Sunday morning. I think about it on Friday night. And I think that's what this 31-year-old wants. They want that. And it was a process. I don't want to say it happened, you know, in a moment in time, but there was, you know, a long period of struggle. And I do empathize with that. And I have a lot of hope for you because, you know, you too, Sal, probably couldn't have foreseen that this would be your calling, but it is. And callings generally, you know, take a while to develop and to deepen over time.
No, that's incredible advice. And Angela, I think I'll commit us. We're going to have at least one more conversation.
Let's do it.
For all, I would all love these other that. Questions. So right. Thank you so much for joining us. Thanks everyone else for joining us. As you could tell, we wish we could do this for a long time more. But we will, it's good to end on a high point of people wanting more.
If you liked this conversation and you want to hear more from Angela Duckworth, well, first of all, stick around. We'll have more conversations with Professor Duckworth on this show. But you can also find her on the podcast she hosts with Stephen Dubner, No Stupid Questions. And you can check out her book, Grit, The Power of Passion and Perseverance. If you want to hear more conversations with Sal, subscribe to this podcast and tell a friend. If you want to support the work we do here at Khan Academy, visit khanacademy.org/donate. We need your help to make sure that our materials can reach as many learners as possible, especially during this moment of COVID lockdowns. That's khanacademy.org/donate. That's our podcast, folks. Your host is Salman Khan. This show is produced by my wonderful Khan Academy co-workers, Kevin Dangour, Ken Jones, Stephanie Yamkovenko, Dan Tew, Irene Wang, Jenna Herzog, Anthony Nelson, Felipe Escamilla, Irene Chen, and me, David Reinstrom. Our intro theme is Time Flux by Revolution Void. Our outro theme is Onward by Poddington Bear. Until next time, as Sal likes to say, onward.